listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of Your Ultimate Life on LA Talk Radio. This is a program dedicated to help you discover and serve with your divine gifts, talents, and in the process, create purpose, prosperity, and joy. I have a great guest I'm excited to have with me today, someone I've known for several years and is a major dude. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you, Kellen. Great to be here. Good to see you again.
Yeah, I love seeing you. I love it every time we talk. So this is a wonderful opportunity because I know that for many years, you know, I'm a little seasoned and you're a little seasoned. You know, you've been through ups and downs.
Can you tell? Can you tell? Does it show?
Well, you know, you at least have something up there. I got nothing. I got a hole. So, you know, here's the thing. I had the opportunity the other day to interview a guy for my podcast who was just amazing. He was using all kinds of expansive words and everything else. And then it turned out he was 21.
Wow.
And I was blown away by his level of understanding. And it turns out he grew up in the projects and there were nine people in a two-bedroom apartment and he had every reason to be anywhere except on a mission to help kids still in high school and younger than him figure out that they don't have to be victims of whatever it is. And his story was amazing. So the world has cool people.
It really does. It really does. And you know, this Generation Z apparently is really going to be changing our society in a big way. Not so much Gen X. We are. I'm actually the last year of the boomers. And I think you're probably in that group as well. And then there's Gen X, and then we have the millennials, and then this. But Gen Z, apparently Gen Z is a generation that's really going to shift things for us. So the 20-year-olds and below.
I hope so. I hope Gen Z is going to do that. And this cat that I talked to the other day was clearly in that group. So today I'm going to talk about your ultimate life because that's what we're talking about. And I want to talk about your ultimate life, Robert. And in the process, I'm hoping and asking, requesting you listeners, viewers, I want you to hear this not as a story about Robert or me, but about you. Like, where do you find parallels? Because our purpose here is to help you, the listeners, create your ultimate life. And because I don't know each of you, I bring you guests and my own story to help you perhaps see parallels and opportunities. Robert, what took you into the world of coaching?
It was by accident. Complete and total accident.
I don't believe in accidents. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it was at that moment. It was my very first Tony Robbins event back in 1995. And I had just 2 weeks, finished it 2 weeks later. And then 11 o'clock at night, I got a knock on the door. And it was one of my friends. And he was extremely distraught, suicidal, had just walked in on his wife having sex in their bedroom with somebody else. And he had a gun in the car. And he says, I just want to do them both in. And I want to commit suicide. So that was my introduction to coaching. It was like, I thought, not on my watch, that isn't going to happen. So I started coaching him, started talking with him and calming him down and doing what I was doing. And something weird happened that night because the words that were coming out of my mouth seemed to be the right words, but I was clear they weren't my words. And it was like, so I didn't tell anybody about that for at least a year afterwards. I didn't know what it was. It was the weirdest thing. And it kind of like surprised me because I'd never experienced channeling before, right? And those words were coming through and they were the right words and it calmed the situation down. He stayed with me that night. And next morning he, you know, did what he needed to do to get the divorce going and you know, put him back on track pretty quickly. It was pretty surprising to me. And it was like, wow, what is this thing called coaching? And, you know, from there, I kind of was hooked on it and said, wow, if I can really help somebody at that level, it just really sparked something in me that I didn't know was there. And it was that really set me on the path to doing coaching.
Well, that's interesting. And I love, it's more than interesting. That's a crummy word. It is revelatory. It is interesting and it's powerful. And then what did you do? So you rose to... There's lots of reasons that happens. One is you were in a position to care. So it was your caring. The first word you said, not on my watch. I'm not going to let this happen. And you, that means that this was not about you. This is about, you're going to be a channel, a vehicle, a vessel, a voice of the divine, helping this person not make a drastic and fatal decision that would ruin several lives, but to do something else. What happened before that, maybe a week, a month, or a year, or maybe other times in your life, that made you into the person that said, not on my watch, and be in a position where you were open so that you could have words of power, words that were appropriate come through you? What happened before that so you were in that frame?
Well, you know, you always go back to childhood, right? Everything prepares you for adulthood, and everything that went through a childhood. My childhood was tough. It was a divorce situation, parents fighting, battling all the time, and mom not being very friendly and being very aggressive. And it was just like, I don't want that for myself, and I don't want that for other people. I don't want them to experience that kind of situation. So it kind of sparked me in that direction. And when I got involved with the Tony Robbins world, it really just opened me up to this whole other way of being. And finally, I think for the very first time when I went through that training, the very first one, I had answers that I'd been seeking forever. Why do people do what they do? Why are they so nasty? Why can they be so mean? What causes them? What's the motivation? What is it behind them that causes them to turn out the way they do? And you can say, oh, well, it's just their childhood experiences. Well, that doesn't really explain it. That gives you maybe a source, but it doesn't really explain what about that created. So it just became for me this passion to really figure it out. Number one, for myself, obviously, right? This is where we're all driven. It's like, I got to find answers for myself so I can be better. And then it was, okay, if I can do it for myself, then I'm able to help other people as well. And that's, I think, the genesis for me where that was, what drove me in that direction.
You know, I want to use that story just a little bit more, because like the fella that I talked to, lots of other people grew up in his neighborhood, in the next apartment, and in projects, the same project or other ones, Section 8 housing and all the rest. And they don't make those realizations. Instead, they let their situation define them, and they get resentful, angry, negative, beat down, destroyed, whatever it is. Yet you had a difficult situation, and you made a choice to do something different. What sparks that choice? Because I suspect, in fact, I don't suspect, I know there's a ton of people that listen to these shows that say, yeah, but, and they list all the reasons why it can't be them, they can't change, they're stuck, and all the rest. So you, in your situation, recited something that millions of people would resonate with, slight different details. What made you make a choice to be a person that says, no, not me, and then further, not on my watch?
Opened my eyes. I saw other people go through it, and I remember being very young in high school, and, you know, walking down the hallway one day and saying, you know, I have every excuse in the world to abuse drugs, to get into alcohol, to be a loser, to be all of these things, every excuse in the world. What's going on at home? And I just remember deciding that's not going to be me. I'm never going to use that as a crutch. I'm never going to use that as a reason not to be all that I can be. And I just became very belligerent, I guess, about it. And I said, I'm not going that way. You know, that was the easy route as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, I could have gotten into drugs. I had friends who were doing drugs. I had access to it if I wanted it. Never did. Never been drunk. Never drank. Never did any of that stuff. I just chose that wasn't going to be my path. And I was going to use this, whatever this difficult situation was, to become something better. And I've been doing that and helping other people get through it as well.
So when we say you have choice and you define your life, and we in the coaching world say all that stuff and all those cliche things, but there you were, a teenager, and maybe before, but clearly in high school as a teenager, aware of your choices, aware of your situation, and simply saying, because I said so, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something else. Is that what you're telling me?
That's what I'm telling you. And I was lucky in high school. I had two teachers, one science teacher, one math teacher, who I befriended and would hang out with outside of school. So my dad wasn't available because he was battling with mom all the time. And there was that situation. And I was hanging out with the teachers after school. They would take me on hunting trips and fishing trips and stuff like this on the weekends. It was like, it was the greatest thing because I had some sense of what normal felt like rather than the chaos that I was living. And it was like, yeah, that's really what I want. That's my vision. I want normal. I want that. And it was good that I had that example. I know not everyone has that. And they may not know because they're caught in a situation and they can't see out of it because everywhere they look, it's the same thing. I was lucky I had that. And those teachers were, you know, I guess astute enough to realize, hey, you know, not a good home situation for this guy. Let's see if we can help him out a little bit. And they did. And I helped them out immensely as well, giving them opportunities to, you know, get out of the house on the weekend, get away from the wife if they needed to for the weekend, and, you know, give them a reason to do something more than what they would normally do. So it worked out well.
Yeah, it did. And I want to talk about the teachers for just a minute. Because each one of us now as adults, regardless of the situation that we were brought up in, we, all of us, have a choice right here, right now, to live locked up in our own awareness of our own misery or happiness or situation. Like, this is me. I'm looking out for me. That's all I got to do. But those teachers, for reasons you will perhaps never know, probably never know, made a choice to make an observation about one of the kids in the class and say, you know, we might be able to make a difference here. And they chose to do that. And so that choice affected you, and it helped you put your hammer down, your fist or whatever, say, not me, I'm going to do something different, and then create that. And now you, in turn, have helped your friend, where you, or that person that you helped, you know, through that moment of peril, and then also made a life out of, because you said so, because you chose to, out of being a resource to help others. So the ripple effect is so important.
It is, and those teachers didn't have to do it, right? So that was, it was their choice, and I don't know what the divine guidance was, that they saw something in me, that there was a spark, there was something they saw that said, this guy could be helped, and they did. And it was really... I'll never forget it. I mean, it was just, it was amazing to see, you know, how much of an impact it did have on me during those years. Because I was going through some rough times, obviously, you know, the family life not being great. And I would do everything not to come home from school until 7-8 o'clock at night every day. Everyone else would be home at 3, and I'd be doing everything I could to stay after school. And I became the head photographer for the yearbook on my senior year. And, you know, that was great because it just gave me an excuse to be in the darkroom and develop pictures or go take pictures of sporting events or something. And I always had an excuse not to go home.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. Like, if we had the chance to talk to your teachers, we could ask them what made you do that. And they would have a story. And they would say whatever it is that happened to them that made them choose. And so the premise of this show, Your Ultimate Life, is the foundational idea that you, me, and each listener can create a life of purpose. And it doesn't come on a silver platter. Like you said, those teachers could have ignored you. They could have been too busy grading papers or their own situation because their lives were full of challenges because everybody's is.
Yep.
Yep. Yet something about their backstory brought them to a place where they said, I want to do this. And so every one of you listening, you can make those choices to create even a trajectory of 1% improvement. Is that true, Robert?
Absolutely. And then that one little percent, you take it out 10 years and all of a sudden it's, you know, 30, 40, 50% or higher. And that's exactly what happened with me because then I really got I learned how to hustle. I learned how to take care of myself. I learned how to be independent through all of that. And those hunting trips that we went on, it was like, you know, 16 years old and I'm out there hunting deer and you know, we're out in the woods in dark. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, one teacher said, I'm going up the mountain this way. Another teacher said, I'm going up the mountain that way. And they just like, you go down the middle. It's like, okay. You know, at 16 years old, being in that situation, it was like, well, this is really interesting. You know, there's no flashlight. Can't use a flashlight. You scare the deer away. So, yeah, it really helped me grow quickly. And like maybe that's what they saw in me. They saw that, you know, kind of when you have that kind of childhood, you really have to mature quickly. You don't really get to be a kid until you're 18 or so. You have to mature a little bit quicker. And that really helped. Those kind of things really helped a lot.
So let's move past that story because that was a foundational thing for you. And you've made a choice to love and serve people with your gifts. How did you identify what your talents, gifts were? I mean, I know you gave me the situation of being thrust into coaching when the guy was going to do something atrocious and it would have been sad. But what else? What other things happened that allowed you to discover? And I use those words on purpose because a lot of times when people talk to you or me, they'll say, I don't know what my gifts are. I got no idea what I can do.
Hey, that was me.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about that.
So yeah, after the coaching experience, I called up the Tony Robbins company. And I said, what have you got? And you know, they had other programs. So I signed up for other programs. And there was one program in particular. He did a program called Date with Destiny. And it was here in Palm Springs, California. And I was living in Long Island at the time. So that was a big jump for me to go to Palm Springs for a 5-day seminar. And the premise of the seminar was to find out what your gifts are, find out what your purpose is, your life purpose is. You know, lots of exercises, very little sleep. The thing would end at like 3-4 in the morning sometimes, and we'd be back in the room at 8 a.m., very little time. Plus, you had homework to do, so you really didn't have much time to sleep. And one of the exercises was really interesting. It was closed eye, and it was, I don't know, 2-3 in the morning or something. I thought I'd fallen asleep. And when he'd like bring, okay, come on back and open your eyes, and I opened my eyes, and all of a sudden, the words were right there in front of me. It's like the purpose of my life is to use my skills, knowledge, and experience to help myself and other people succeed. And I wrote that down really quickly. And then Tony Robbins comes off the stage and he goes, okay, what's your life purpose? And he calls on me. I step up and I say that in front of him. He's like, that's perfect. That's outstanding. I'm like, wow, I don't even know where that came from. And ever since that point, it's like that was actually true then. It still is true today. Everything that I've been through, I end up using in some way. So I worked for the Tony Robbins group in Chicago for 2 years, coached over 2,000 people face-to-face. Yeah, 10, 12 people a day in hotel lobbies for the most part after doing seminars on Saturday or coaching them all week. It gave me a great foundation to be able to see that everything that I've been through didn't get lost. Everything that I've been through, all the challenge, all the struggles, their stories, there are lessons in them that I could use and have used to help other people who are going through similar things. Yeah, the dates, times, and you know, the colors and textures are different. But at the end of the day, we all go through the same kinds of things, you know, and it was really good to be able to have that, to be able to use it as a foundation to help others.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you believe, and none of this is scripted, you know that, I know that, and I'm telling the listeners, do you believe that every single person who breathes air has the ability to use their experiences, good or bad, their learnings and everything, to create growth and opportunity in their life?
If they choose to, it's a decision.
Talk more about that.
A lot of people will go through life and they'll say, well, I've been working this job for 40 years. And when you really take a look at it, is they doing the same job 40 years over. So they've got 1 year of experience 40 times over rather than learning and growing. So for me, a foundation for me is always, I don't go to sleep unless I've learned something. I want to grow every day. I want to be growing every day. I want to learn something new every day. I want to find out something. So a foundational belief for me is everyone can teach me something. I don't care if it's the guy sweeping the street, the janitor, everyone can teach me something and there's something to learn. And I'm always eager to learn. I'm always open to that because it helps me grow. It helps me be better. So the choice is really, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to do the same thing and come home, turn on the dummy box and sit there and veg? Or do you want to do something with the knowledge experience you've had? If you look at just in the marketing community, I know you and I are big in that world as well. Who are the most successful? They're the ones who bring the most value to the marketplace, right? So they're bringing their skills, their knowledge, their experience to market and they're getting really rewarded for it. And you and I are doing that, everything we've been through, instead of burying it and saying, boy, that was horrible. I want to forget about that. We say, well, no, there are lessons there. Let's take those lessons forward. Let's bring them out in such a way that we can help people. This radio show is a great example of that. You're helping people, you know, share their experiences in such a way that people could look at it and say, you know what? Yeah, I've been through, you know, a mess too. Now you can use your mess to become your message, as Dean Graziosi is famous for saying. Turn your mess into your message and sell that message. And you know, you've got a business around it and you're helping other people. And I think that really, that's the key to it.
So do you think the mess is the message? Yeah, that's a nice way to remember that. What do you say to someone who comes to you? I mean, first of all, people often just stay married to their excuses, married to their situation. Yep. They remain unhappy and they complain. And that's how they live their lives. They settle for what's easy and obvious and complain about everything that's not there. So a person like that, I'm not talking to or about right now. I'm talking maybe to someone who has done that, but has reached a point that says, you know, I'm tired of that. I'm tired of settling for the easy and obvious. I see other people do stuff. I have this yearning in me to do something, to be something, to make something more than maybe on my 17th of the 40 years over and over again. And you know, at the beginning of year 18, I think we're done here. And so they find somehow, because you're on social or you do whatever you do, they find Robert and they say, you know, Robert, I want to talk to you about this. And they tell you whatever their backstory is a bit. And you see that they've done that 17 times over. Where do you start with them? And they've come to you, so they have at least the spark of interest to make that change. What do you start with?
Permission. People need permission to succeed. Strangely, we do. We're taught in school, you want to ask a question, you got to ask permission to ask the question, right? You got to raise your hand. And, you know, we go through life like that. We need permission. So we give them permission to succeed. You have permission to change your life. You have permission to do better for yourself. You have permission to go try something you haven't tried before. Oh, really? Because they don't know that when they're caught, especially if they've been in something for 18 years, like you say, they don't know that. They've forgotten that message. So I always start with that. It's like I give them permission to succeed, give them permission to try something that maybe they haven't tried before. And then you start look at the reasons why they don't do it. Well, all change is preceded by a tough time called chaos, right? We don't like chaos. We don't like chaos. We want things to be the same every day. Well, the same every day gives you the same result. Unless things change, you don't get a better result. So you got to go through a little bit of the chaos, a little bit of the, gee, I don't know what I'm doing. This is crazy. And you and I have done this in business too. We've done many things that have totally bombed and failed. But we don't recoil from it as much as, okay, what can we learn from it? Let's do it again. But let's change this or change that. Let's try it this way instead. And we keep trying until we get to that point where we start having the success we're looking for.
I love that you said permission. One of the funny ways, I see, I had a client that I've now had for 7 or 8 years. And in the beginning, year one or two, there were some things that we were working on. And one of the things I felt telling him, and I told him really loud, in fact, we were doing Zoom, but I was shouting. And I said, you have permission to be weird, right? You have permission to be weird. Because for him, weird was doing something outside this box of expectations. And I said, you have permission to be weird. And so I love the fact that you said permission. What in the world is it about our world that makes us believe to the core of our soul, so that affects our actions and belief about what we can have and everything? Like we need permission to breathe almost. Why is it like that? What's happening that makes us feel like we need permission to breathe?
Well, it goes back to our school system, right? So how are we trained in school? You need permission to go to the bathroom. You need a hall pass. You need to raise your hand if you want to ask a question, right? So it's always about that. It's always about you need permission. You need permission. You just can't be who you are. You can't just go out and do whatever you want to do. There are rules. There are laws. There are, you know, and as adults, you can't drive your car on the sidewalk. You can't drive backwards down the highway. You know, you can't do things that are outside. There are rules. And people take that too much, too far, and they put rules on themselves that don't really exist. But they make them in their own mind because they don't know how far they can stretch the rule, how far they can go before they run into a rule. And so instead of running into it, because what happened in school when we broke the rules? Did we get rewarded or did we get punished?
No, in fact, you say that about permission to go to the bathroom. I remember in second or third grade, my teacher wouldn't let me go to the bathroom, and so I peed myself there in class on the floor, and it was embarrassing and everything else, but she wouldn't give me permission to go to the bathroom. Yeah. And I couldn't. And so why is it that we got punished for breaking rules before in some way, intimidated, ridiculed, or physically punished, depends on your situation. What are we afraid of? We're adults now. Nobody's going to, you know, we're not there in class anymore, but we still, like an elephant in the string and the chain story, where the elephant's trained with a chain and then later won't even break a string, even though it's grown up. What is it that makes us so frightened? What are we scared of about running into one of those rules?
You hit it right on the head. It is fear. At the bottom of it, it's all fear. And what's the fear? The fear is, what will other people think? What will other people say? Will I get in trouble? How bad will the trouble be? Will I lose my job over it? Will I lose my relationship over it? Will I get injured? Will I get hurt? Will I get fired? Right? We've got all these fears that just stack and stack and stack. And all of those in our brain keep us from moving forward. And really, the best way to deal with it is just address each one and say, so what? If you were to get fired, what's the worst thing that could happen? We get a new job. And when I adopted that in my early 20s. I got fired a couple of times from job. I am chronically unemployable as an entrepreneur. So I got fired from several jobs. And when I got fired, yeah, it bothered me for that day. But my mantra always was, I'll find another job. It was always next. You know, got fired from that one, didn't work out. I'll find something else, or I'll create something else. And it really is just about addressing those fears and say, okay, what's the worst thing that can happen? And is it really as worse as you think it is? Is it really that bad? Or maybe it's a blessing in disguise. And you start diminishing those things that really get the emotional juice out of those fears. And all of a sudden you're able to move forward. Take that next step. Is every step going to be the right step? No. Are you going to fail? Uh-huh. Are you going to get hurt? Yep, probably. Not a good enough reason not to do it. It's not a good enough reason not to do it.
So let's go to sports. Anybody, I'm thinking of skiing for some reason, but anybody that learns to ski or snowboard, do they crash? Well, of course they do. Do they get hurt? Yes, of course they do. Some people let that make them run away, and other people say, well, that's okay. I'm going to be more careful. I'm going to learn a new technique. I'm going to make sure I wear my helmet. I'm going to do whatever it is so that I can keep going. Do you think some people are somehow cursed that they are incapable, even if they want to, of moving forward? Or is that all something we learn?
It's all something we learn. And the reality is, it's like, you've got to have that goal. You got to say, I want to be a great skier. And it's got to be something you will not go to sleep at night and get up early in the morning and learn how to do. And no matter what happens, whatever obstacle, you just keep your eye on the goal. Keep your eye on the goal, and you'll get there eventually. And a lot of people don't. They give up when the first time they fall. Skiing's probably not for me. But it's funny, because as children, we didn't know how to walk. And, you know, the first time we took a few steps, we fell. And what if we said, well, you know, walking thing's just not for me. I'm going to crawl for the rest of my life. Well, we kind of didn't do that. So we knew how the system worked back then. But for some reason, as adults, we kind of forgot that, you got to go through those challenges to be able to reach the goals you want to reach. And people give up too easy. They just do.
Okay, good. I'm glad you said that. So people give up too easy. Now, I'd like to get practical as much as we can in the time we've got. When a person has had a habit of giving up, a habit of saying, walking's not for me, I'm going to crawl the rest of my life, which is funny, but it's a good metaphor, because we do that. Yep. And we crawl in so many ways when we could get up and walk and then maybe even fly. So when someone wants to do that and they're trying to learn, how do you help me come to you and learn to get up again? Even though I've lived in this fear, and you give me permission, I have permission to fail. I have permission to do it wrong. It's okay. Nobody's going to die over it, and it doesn't really matter what someone says. How do you help me learn a new algorithm for operating?
You can't force a person to do. It has to come from within, right? So I can't make you do things that are going to be good for you. You've got to decide. Hey, I can't say, Kellen, that hamburger, you probably don't want to eat that. And you're going to say, yeah, get out of my face. I'm having my burger, right? So there has to be an internal drive for that. In NLP, they have something called future pacing. And future pacing can be both positive or negative. So you could future pace somebody and say, if you continue to go on the path you're on, where do you end up in 5 years? Where do you end up in 10 years or 20 years? And people will look at that and they'll go, that's not the outcome I want. That's the road you're on. Is that where you want to go? No. Okay, where do you want to go? All right. What does that look like if you did take these actions, although they may be hard, they may be challenging for you? Where does that lead you? Where would you be a year from now? Where would you be 2 years from now, 5 years from now? It's easy to do it with income, right? I'll often do that with people with money. And so if you continue the job you're in right now, you pretty much know what you're going to make for the next 5 years. Yeah. Okay. If you started your own business, what would that look like? Could it be worse? Could it be better? Well, it could be a lot better. How much better? And you start building that vision for them. And that helps to move them forward when they get a handle on, wow, if I continue down this road, this is not where I want to go. That road's much better. And they'll make that decision to change. You don't have to do it for them because you can't. You can't make a person do what's good for them. They have to decide.
You know, it's funny. Every parent discovers that trying to raise kids. You can't, ultimately, you can't make them do anything because they're going to have to discover that on themselves. So tell me a little bit about, in your business experience, you made a comment earlier about doing things that bombed. Tell me about a thing that bombed, how it felt, and what you decided because you were thinking, well, even though that failed, this is still on the road of where I want to go, and that's just a speed bump. Tell me about something like that, and what was the motivation that kept you going?
I had a big challenge with needing approval from the outside for a long time. And every time I would come up with a new idea, you know, the chatter from the friends and the relatives, oh, that's dumb, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard, blah, blah, blah. And so a lot of times I wouldn't even start projects that I felt that I really wanted to do. And I remember sitting at home one New Year's Eve, I was by myself, and I took out one of those, you know, little flip charts that we use in seminars, the big boards.
I took out
one of those and I laid it on the table and I said, here's what I want to create. I want to create a membership program that I would want to join. And I called it the Millionaire Club. And of course, all my friends, you can't do that. You haven't done $1 million, blah, blah, blah. But I've helped other companies make $1 million, right? So no, I haven't done it for me personally, but I've helped other people do it. So I wanted to create this. And the peanut gallery went crazy. And the louder they got, the more resistant I got to hearing it. And I did it anyway. And the first year I helped 5 people within 18 months become millionaires by building that. And it was just really stop listening to the peanut gallery, do what's in your heart, do what you know is the right thing to do, and just move forward. People don't often know, you know, it's like you can't know what's inside a person's heart. You can't know what their skills, their abilities, you can't see their vision. You might hear about it and it's something different than you're used to. And that's where the rejection, the pushback comes. Don't do it. Don't do it. And it often comes from fear. They don't want to see you get hurt, right? So the people sometimes who are the closest to you end up being your biggest critics and the biggest reason that you don't get to move forward. But you got to push through that because that's one of the biggest things that held me back. And it over and over again, it was like for years, project after project wouldn't get started because of that.
Well, it sounded like that one, you ignored them and went ahead and did it anyway. Yeah. What ultimately, and you know, I don't know if that's still a problem at all for you now, but what ultimately helped you? Because every person, but nearly every person that I talk to has the experience of having a pile of close people who discourage them from doing things. And it might be because they're afraid of them just getting disappointed, you're going to get hurt or something. It might be because they don't want you to be better than they are and accomplish something they can't do. It might be a bunch of reasons, and I'm not assigning any reason to anybody. But what is it that helped Robert ultimately get past, or as past as you feel you are, with that paying attention to the peanut gallery, as you call it? I love that, peanut gallery, right? The hecklers. What made you finally see, you know what, I'm not going to even do that. It's not an issue for me.
Frustration. Frustration built to a point where I wasn't able to move forward. I wasn't able to take a step forward without hearing from the peanut gallery, and you can't do that, and that's a dumb idea, and this and that. And it was just a matter of, okay, so my life stays the same if I listen to them, and those relationships stay the same. And if I don't listen to them, there'll be a period where they won't be supportive. But at some point, they'll come around. And that was been my experience, is they all come around eventually when they see what you're doing is working. And when you do something that doesn't work, you know, instead of moping and being upset about it, you say, well, you know, if the Millionaire Club thing didn't work, I would have said, well, at least I got to try it. I'm happy about that. What did I learn from it? How can I make it something different the next time out? Right. So the frustration is really what drove me.
frustration drove you to where you said, I've had enough of this, because I know that continuing to listen to it leaves me where I am all the time. A number of times, I'm going to just kind of switch gears here. A number of times you've mentioned, like starting with the event with Tony Robbins, where you did the visualization exercise and words appeared, and someone might hear that any way they hear it, and that's up to them. And you've also mentioned the, you know, feelings inside you and intuition and stuff. I want to address that directly. So what do you help people understand about intuition, spirit connection? I call them divine gifts and talents. How do you address that to two parts, I guess? One, to accept that it's true, and two, then do something with it. What do you do? And I realize you can't make people, but how do you work on that?
No, and a lot of what I do, Killen, is I don't even bring that into the conversation, because some people just aren't ready for it. Those that are, we have great conversations around it, and I can help them there. But some just aren't ready for it. But I use it in the coaching all the time. And people are shocked sometimes. It's like, I know things about them that they haven't told me. And they're like, whoa, how did you know that? Then it was just information that I'm picking up on them. You know, it's that kind of thing. So sometimes it doesn't enter into the conversation in that way where I say, hey, you know, you've got these gifts too, unless we end up going there. And it's not often that, you know, someone who isn't open to it is ready all of a sudden to be open to it. So they don't even know that it's happening. It's being used in the coaching sessions, but it is. I'll give you an example. I was when I was coaching with the Tony Robbins group in Chicago for 2 years, I didn't know that I had this gift with intuition. And there was a fellow that walked in, and big 6 foot, whatever, built like a tank. And he came, sat down next to me, and I turned to him, and he could have beat me up and chewed me out and spit me on the floor like instantly. And I turned to him and I looked him right in the face and I said, how long have you been a fraud? And I thought he was going to kill me, right? And he starts crying. And he goes, how did you know? I said, I didn't. That's just what came through. And we had a conversation. He became a really good friend. And every year he'd send me a Christmas card. Thank you so much for changing my life. I finally identified with who I really am. And it was that kind of thing. So the intuition becomes a very important piece that sometimes you don't get when you're just working with the thinking brain. A lot of people will coach with just that piece of the brain. And I don't think you can get the results you need to get if you've only got that going for you. So for me, the intuition is always a part of what I do. And if it comes up in conversation, it comes up. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And, you know, I don't bring it up, you know, for someone I can sense is not ready for it.
In terms of using developing gifts, one of the ways that I talk about creating your ultimate life is discovering, developing, and serving with your gifts. And I always call them divine gifts. And I have had the same, initially the same reticence to bring it up directly, because I don't know how people receive it. And for whatever reason, I've made a decision to just quit doing that. And I do it anyway. And good, if people get weird, they get weird. And I don't even care.
Yep.
But what I know is that discover, develop, and serve with those gifts is a really important process. So what does Robert do to prepare himself so that he always has access to the gifts, the intuition, the connection with whatever power? I'm not trying to tell anybody what to call the greater thing, but with the universe, what do you do to prepare yourself so that you have access to that, even in this conversation or in a conversation with a dude in Chicago? Or what do you do so that that's available?
You're going to hate my answer.
No, I'm not.
I do nothing different. I show up, and what I do is I get everything turned off, so nothing is going to interrupt me. And I'm here. I'm present. I'm in the present moment. And I'm just connected, and the information just flows. The only time that I have a trouble with it is when I come in and I'm tired, right? The more tired I am, the harder it is to connect. But when I'm in my space, I'm in my zone, I'm in my studio, I've got someone on Zoom, or I've got someone in front of me, I'm just there present, and the information is just there for me to receive.
So I'm going to tell you that it's not nothing. I'm going to completely contradict you, because you just gave me two things. You make sure that you're well rested. In fact, three or four things. You make sure that you're well rested. You make sure nothing else is going on for you. Everything is turned off, so you're only doing what that thing is. They're present for you, and that you're fully focused on that person. So those are three key things. Well rested, everything turned off. They're present for that person only. That means you're not worried about you and what you look like.
Right.
There's several things that are very substantive and not automatic, because we live so much in the worrying about ourselves mode. So
it's unconsciously competent for me. So I just do it. I don't even think about it.
Okay, right? Good.
It's not even, it is at that level where it's just like, this is how I show up. And that's why I say it's like, I don't really prepare because, well, me, you're right. I do prepare, but I don't recognize it as such. Some people just go to the gym. Other people say, gee, what running shoes should I wear? What should I wear? What should my, workout clothes be? Can I go at 4 o'clock? And they ask a million questions before they go. Some people just go, right?
So good. That leads me right where I wanted to go. So there are several things in your unconscious competence. If you're familiar with the listeners, familiar with the four things of, I don't even know, whatever they are, but unconscious competence means it's part of who you are. You didn't fall up that mountain. Nobody falls up that mountain. So what preparation processes or activities, one of them you mentioned already, I'm committed to learning something from every single person. I'm committed to growing all the time. So you've listed a couple. Are there other things that you have done as a habit that have brought you to a place where your unconscious competence is to be fully present, all distractions are off, be fully rested, and not worried about your own aggrandizement or stature, but you're there to help the person? What other things have happened to help you do that?
A lot of experience in that, right? So it wasn't that way up front. Up front, I was very self-confident, self-conscious, and paid a lot of attention to what was going on with me. And then I realized it's like, I'm really not here for me. And it started with public speaking. I had the opportunity to be dragged on stage by Tony Robbins for the very first time, and I had so much fear around that. And he knew it, and he knew that I would be able to break through that fear, and I did. And then I would help other public speakers who were scared to death of going on the stage. And I would say to them, I want you to picture in your mind the spotlight that you think is on you. I want you to turn it around and put it on the audience, because that's why you're here. Nothing to do with you. And I learned that lesson. It was like, that changed everything for me. Then it was just like, yeah, it's not about me. It's about them. I'm 100% here for them. I'm here to serve. And that mindset is what made it just so much easier to be present, to be connected, to, like you said, I don't worry about how I look. I don't worry about how I sound. I know that I'm here to deliver. And when I go on stage, or if I go on the radio or television or whatever, it's the same thing. I'm not thinking about me. I'm thinking about the people watching, the people listening, and what can I deliver, and how can I bring value to their lives.
So thank you for that. And thank you for letting me play with you a little and disagree and drag you through that, because nobody falls up the mountain. And any mountain you want to climb, just like Robert described, if you make an effort to do that, you can have what's at the top of the mountain if you want to climb it, even to the level where you're in unconscious competence, which means automatically it's who you are and everything else. So, Robert, I'd like to talk about the different kinds of programs that you offer now that you have this learning and you show up this way for people. You've talked a little bit about your old experiences with Tony Robbins. I know you've done a bunch of other things in between. You've talked about helping people learn to speak. I know you're a, quote, coach, which means a lot of things to whoever it means. Tell us what you do, how you define coaching, what you do right now. What kinds of things do you offer to help people who are willing to do the work, climb the mountain, make the change? What are you doing?
I got started, like I said, with the Tony Robbins group, coaching 2,000 plus people in the first 2 years in every walk of life possible. And at the end of that, I was totally burned out because I was doing it coaching 7 days a week, sometimes 12 hours a day. And I decided after that I was going to focus, and I was going to focus on my group of people, which is the entrepreneurial crowd, the people who are the business owners, the people who are in the trenches doing what they're doing. So my focus has been for the last 20 plus years working with business owners, chiropractors, professionals, digital marketers, speakers, authors, other coaches as well, and helping them really get out of their own way, you know, get out of the thinking that keeps them from being more successful and reaching more people. And I often give them goals instead of saying, hey, let's look at a financial goal. I turn it around and I say, let's look at a reach goal. How many people can you reach this year with your message? How many people could you reach out to this week, this month? And that is a lot softer for them than a money goal, because money is a lot of different connotations with money for people. So money can be a little challenging. So yeah, my joy is working with the entrepreneurial crowd. We are a different beast, you know, chronically unemployable. And we live by a different set of rules, right, than the employee does. So it's been my fun to work with that crowd.
It's fun that you say that. I didn't realize I was chronically unemployable until you told me. So now I realize that even though I was an employee for the first 10 or 15 years of my 30-year career in the energy industry, the last 10, well, maybe even 20, the last 10 or 12, I was a consultant because I kept getting fired from sometimes very high level, even C-suite positions. I got fired a few times. And then became a consultant, and then changed everything in 2007 to become a coach and do the work that I do now. So you've told me that you love working with entrepreneurs, and I think entrepreneurs make the world go round. They're going to be what saves economies in the world in the end, because they are creative and have the drive to bring value. I'd like you to get a little bit more specific and tell me about what kinds of programs you offer this entrepreneurial crowd. And you listed a whole bunch of people. Do you have any programs, or is it just one at a time they come and you do whatever?
It's one-on-one coaching for now. And what we do is I bring them in and I start them off with what their goal is. So I had that fellow many years back I was coaching, and he came in, his suit and tie, and he came in. I said, so, okay, what's your goal? He says, well, I want to buy a Cadillac. I said, well, why don't you go buy it? He's like, what's the problem? Right? So that really wasn't the goal. He thought it was his goal. It wasn't the goal. He could just go and write the check and buy the Cadillac. No big deal. So the coaching that I do is, okay, what is it that you want to accomplish that you've not been able to accomplish? And let's walk through whatever the steps are that have been keeping you. Let's diminish the emotion on it that's keeping you scared, and let's allow you to move forward. So I do a 12-week program with my clients and help walk them through step by step. And every week they've got something to do. So there's a check-in, right? And they have access to me in between our calls as well. So if there's something that comes up all of a sudden that they need an answer to, they can text me, they can call me, whatever, and we can work through it. And it's very enlightening for them, because they get a person who is, this is the big thing, not attached to the outcome emotionally, right? So I have no attachment to anything that they're doing. I don't jump into their fears or their uncertainty or their whatever it is that's going on with them. I just give them the straight path forward for them and help them work through those fears or whatever it is that's keeping them from having success. I had a client one time, he had amassed a list of 30,000 people. And I said, 30,000 people, that equivalent, you know, back then, every 10,000 people would be about $1 million a year. I said, you should be doing about $3 million a year. How much are you doing? He says, I haven't made any money. I'm like, why not? Why haven't you mailed a list? And then he listed out all the fears of all the reasons why he wouldn't mail a list. People would hate me. They'll be mad at me. They'll think I'm selling. All these things that were big in his mind, but in reality, we get emails from people all the time. Do we get mad at them? Do we yell at them? You know, it's like, so it was just changing that made all the difference. He did it one session, and all of a sudden now he's emailing, and you know, the company's growing, and it's just one of those things.
So if people want to find you, Robert Imbriali, what's the best way to find you? Oh, robertimbriali.com.
That's the, and Robert Imbriali on most social networks as well.
Robert Imbriali. And so that's how to find him. If you want to have a conversation to see if any of the things that he's talked about resonate with you, excite you, make you want to jump up and down and change direction, or get the emotional blocks and barriers out of your way. So, Robert, if you have the opportunity to leave our audience with a final thought. First of all, I want to thank you for being here, but what would your final thought be?
Thank you for having me, first of all, number one. And my final thought is, all those beliefs that you have around, I can't do it, I've never been able to do it. They're just beliefs. Fear is not something you can show me. You can't show me fear. You can't give it to me in a box. You can't give it to me in a bottle. You can't show it to me in the room. It exists between our ears. That's the only place it exists. And if you were able to remove that, your life would be totally different. So that's where I work. That's what I do with my clients. That's what I do with even relatives and friends. Sometimes they have those kind of things come up. And I just talk them through it, and not in an aggressive way, because I don't think that works. So I just want you to know that everything that you want, you can have. You can get where you want to go. You just got to get past the fear. And no matter what you call it, procrastination or whatever, at the bottom line, it's always fear. And if you can get through that, the world is your oyster.
Robert, I want to thank you for taking time, effort, energy, not just for this hour, but the work that you do every day to be who you are, to bring your love, passion, and total presence to those like you did today here with us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Kellen. I enjoyed it.
So I want to give you here at the final moment this thought. We have had Robert here with us today, and I can tell you for sure, because I know him, I know his work, and I know the principles that he teaches. If you choose to listen to this once or twice or three times and write down the things that strike you and make some changes, you'll be able to achieve what you want. You'll be able to move forward. You'll be able to know when and where you need help. And ultimately, you'll be able to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.